And it's Steve Cooper.
I just returned from a tour of Prince William Sound. A little different. It looks a little different from the tour that I took in 1985. And it's clear to me that we've got a real big job to do. There's no question about it. I stopped off on Green Island, went over to Cordova this morning and talked with people there, went over to Titlick, then stopped over at Green Island where there's a lot of oil on the beach and some dead birds and some other things that I didn't want to see, but that's the situation that we're working in here. Now, jurisdictionally, there's a federal statute under which we are required to operate, and I'm not going to go into a lot of detail with that. But there is a state statute also that gives us separate jurisdiction, and where the existing management structure of this cleanup is not adequate to the task, then we're going to do it ourselves, independent of that. I want to commend particularly the fishermen out of Valdez, the fishermen out of Cordova, and I think increasingly we're going to see participation by fishermen from other areas of the state, Seward and other places. We have put together the state and fishermen's strike force, that's what we're going to call it, and it's already been deployed. We've got a lot of volunteers who understand what this country is like and what we have to do to save whatever we can. We want to boom off some of the smaller bays and some of the areas that we think we can save. We certainly want to save those hatcheries. And we want to be sure that strike force has got the equipment and the material and whatever else they need to get the job done. There are a lot of people who need to be commended down here in Valdez and also in Cordova. And the thing I want to stress here today is that we've just started. This effort is going to last for months and months and months. We want to be sure that those who are damaged by this disaster are properly compensated. We are going to put a representative of the governor's office both in Valdez and in Cordova. They'll be here tomorrow. And we want for the people of this community to coordinate through Jim Sellers, who will be representing my office. We're also sending a person to Cordova, and I advised the people this morning about where that office was going to be. The damages that are caused by this tragedy are going to last for a long time. We don't want anybody to think that they have to hire a lawyer and go into federal court and sue the largest corporation in America. We want to put a system together that will allow you who are suffering damages, the fishermen and other people in this area, to bring to us a fairly simple set of proof of whatever you lose, and we want you to be paid quickly and expeditiously. Point two, you don't have to wait until the damages are all proven out here 5 and 6 years from now, maybe, in order to collect. As soon as you can show that you have suffered damages by reason of this, we want to be sure that you're paid. We're working out the details of this, and we haven't gotten it together completely yet, but I want to assure you that we're on your side, that the state of Alaska represents you, and we want to be sure that particularly the fishermen, but other people who are damaged by this, get compensated fairly and quickly. Now, want to say one other thing. It is necessary for the state of Alaska and Exxon and the U.S. Coast Guard to work together on cleaning up this spill. It's necessary that we work together. We will get a lot more done that way. I've said earlier that when, as, and if we happen to disagree with the other two members of that group, that if we believe our stance is correct, we'll do it ourselves. But please bear in mind that this is a cooperative effort, that it is going to take a long, long time to clean up this mess. And I think, without going into any detail, that the sorts of things that happened yesterday here in this building should not happen again. It's not worthy of us as Alaskans. Thank you very much, and I want to call on Denny Kelso to give you a few more details. Thank you.
Governor Steve Cooper leaving the podium. Now DEC
Governor
Commissioner
made
Dennis Kelso.
To the State Fishermen's Strike Force and the effort we're going to begin. It's underway now. And I'd like to ask Larry Dietrich, director of our Division of Environmental Quality, to come up and give you some specific details. And then after we've done that, I'd like to take just a moment for Jack Lamb from the Cordova District Fishermen United to say a word, and then we'll be available, all of us, for questions. I'd like to just make one note as we go. What we're doing now, what Larry will describe to you, is a very specific, aggressive effort to deliver on one of the three things that we've been talking about that are priorities. Those priorities are making sure that there's no further discharge of oil from that vessel, making sure that we protect the areas that we identified as highest priority, the original state fishermen's strike team effort, and third, getting as much oil out of the water as possible. The initiative you're about to hear about does not involve beach cleanup. Beach cleanup is important, but it's going to need to wait. We need to get as much water and oil. We need to get as much oil out of the water as we absolutely can and as fast as we can. So that's the focus. We're in the process of putting together a plan to involve volunteers. Alaskans have shown their concern by volunteering their time, their boats, their energy, and we will, as soon as possible, be announcing the plan for volunteers. In the meantime, we ask that concerned people stay out of the area and continue to work through the strike force, because it's very important, not only to making sure that the strike force effort can go forward, but also to avoiding damage, any further damage to wildlife that's already under great stress. So, without further discussion from me, Larry Dietrich.
Okay, I'll try to be brief and just outline what we're doing here. We got together the other day with the fishermen to see what we felt we could do next. As many of you probably know, our initial plan was defensive in nature, and it was to get booms deployed around those four hatcheries. We feel those are as secure as we can possibly make them now. They're being pretty well maintained. We've got a lot of manpower, and the containment boom is in place, and so we'll continue to manage those. What we tried to do is figure out what we might be able to do next until the other resources were here to start the cleanup. And we felt that trying to get an offensive strategy going in terms of removing product that's out on the water that is removable would be a next logical choice. So we put this together in fairly short notice here. We've been working on it about 12 hours here or something. And under the governor's direction, we've been able to gain the use of the MV Bartlett, which is already loaded up at Cordova. It's on its way back to Valdez. We'll pick up some more containment boom, and he'll be deployed down to the northern area of Knight Island. On board that vessel will be a 40-man cleanup crew. Each crew will have two skiffs with two persons on each skiff. They will pole booms around, collect oil. We will remove that oil from the water, put it into temporary storage containers. It will then be picked up by Exxon, who will provide some oil removal and storage capability. On board the vessel will be a biological team that will be able to take care of any critters that are collected during this recovery effort. We will be asking the contractor, who we will have on board to manage the cleanup teams, provide the equipment to do the cleanup. We're getting into a phase of cleanup that is the less glamorous part of an oil spill. We're talking about intensive labor here and using rope mops, snares, and other very crude techniques to remove the water from the oil. Nonetheless, it is essential that as much product be removed as possible. It's a futile exercise to begin beach cleanup if you have not removed what can be recovered in any given bay. And the reason for that being, of course, at the next tide change, you will simply recontaminate the beach. So our objective is to locate in a protected bay, because we will be working out of skiffs. The operation will, in addition, be supported by four seiners that we have under contract, also with skiffs. Our initial bay is Herring Bay, and we will work from there. The MV Bartlett will be anchored out there. For support, we will have a deck barge is en route and will be on location tonight so that we can have a helipad available with fuel. The helicopter will be used to assist the deployment of the skiffs in their recovery efforts around the shorelines. We will snare as much oil as we can and slowly move it out to the middle of the bay, where we hope to corral it with a larger sea curtain. We will pen that oil in that location then until some vacuum trucks, which have been arranged to be brought in from Prudhoe Bay, can come by and literally suck the oil up out of these trapped areas. The vacuum trucks, I believe we have three now, is that right, Jack?
Yeah, one should be here tonight, and there's two more on the way, should be here in the morning.
We've got two traveling down from Prudhoe Bay by road. Another one is already mounted on a deck barge. The vacuum trucks are something new. We thought we could try to remove the oil rapidly. Hopefully we'll have three of those on the water by sometime tomorrow. The other things you need to have to go along with this, of course, is the logistical support. We have to be able to house the workers, protective gear. We will have a safety officer on board. We will have an EMT capability on board with emergency medical evacuation. We will have a mechanic on board for small outboard repair. Cleanup in these small bays and coves is real tough on outboards because of clogging and water intake, so we expect quite a few mechanical problems. Contractor will clean the skiffs. The labor was provided through the Cordova Fishermen United. They mustered the labor. They should be on board now. We will actually hire them on board the vessel when they get on scene on Monday and do the paperwork then. We will also have decontamination procedures for the workers in the skiffs so that we don't make a mess of the ferry. There will be two or three LCMs available for temporary storage of oil, and the skiffs will come back to the LCMs, deposit their load, workers will change out, decontaminate, get into clean gear, and then board the ferry. The ferry is providing the lodging. We have a 60-man ceiling for overnight capacity on this particular ferry, and the contractor will have about 12 people. We will have a couple of observers and a two or three man biological team. So that's what we have put together. The Aurora, in the meantime, has been mobilized and is en route. It should be here within about 3 to 4 days. We will change out the Aurora with the MV Bartlett because we do not want to interrupt service between Valdez and Cordova for any longer than necessary. The contractor will maintain documentation on recovery rates via various techniques that they will be trying, whether it's snares or rope mops, whatever, to try to select the most efficient means for recovery of the floating product, and that will guide then how we conduct future efforts, and we will expand as necessary with additional crews and manpower if indeed this works well. The effort is being fully coordinated with the Coast Guard and Exxon, and as Exxon gets more equipment and logistical support in place, we will combine efforts on any given bay. Our initial efforts will be to stay in one bay. It's essential that we be in a protected area. And we are hopeful that Exxon will have their milk run in place for pickup of oil. So that's it in a nutshell. We should be in operation tomorrow morning. The Bartlett should be anchored out hopefully today. And we'll deploy the skiffs in the morning and begin recovery of oil.
Jack Lamb from Cordova District Fishermen United.
It seems that our governor and DEC have covered pretty much all the questions or the direction as to where we're headed at this particular time, and they've done a good job in describing it. It's just beginning. But there's a point in this that the governor brought up, and Larry just briefly touched on that. I'd like to elaborate on just a little bit, and it's probably the most difficult part of what is taking place here right now. And that particular part is to wait. And it sounds like a lousy word to use, but we need to take time. This is going to be here a long time. The effort that it's going to take to clean this up is going to take a long time. And when I say wait, everybody goes, and I can understand that. Believe me, I can. I mean, the frustration level gets up at just about this level here, and all you want to do is head for the surface and do some screaming. But we've got to keep this thing working. It's working now. It's going to be working better. This is something the size and the magnitude of which we've never tried to deal with before. The fishermen were ready from almost hour one, and we sat and sat and sat. I mean, I know what the frustration is about. So I'm speaking from the experience that we've had to deal with and the frustration that we've had to deal with. I'm sure that vehicles are going to be set up in which your willingness to participate can be addressed and can be adapted into what we're doing. But it's got to be done in a systematic manner, or else it's going to get so chaotic out there that the success rate is going to go down. And that's the biggest thing we don't want. I'm sorry, but that's still the way we have to work. We have to keep working in continuity and moving forward. And if it becomes a conglomeration of separate efforts with no control and no organization, we wind up defeating our purpose. Prince William Sound was the most beautiful piece of marine environment in the world 2 weeks ago, and now it's not. And our goal is to bring it back to that state, and we can't do it in a month. We can't do it in 2 months. I'm extremely skeptical that we can do it in 2 years. I mean, just from appearance standpoint, let alone bringing back all of the ecology and the marine life and wildlife that's going to be involved in this. So please, go through the vehicles that are set up. Get together with us. We know you're behind us. 25 years ago, in fact, the day that this happened, we had an earthquake. And every Alaskan in the state, everybody in the lower 48 was there to help us. And it's there again today with the incident that we've got now. But just like in that particular incident, we have to keep the thing moving and not ball it up and slow it down. So please use the vehicles and work with us. I know the frustration. And all I can say is thank you for all the backing you provided for us. Moral support has just been unbelievable. And I want to thank everybody in the nation for it. Thank you.
We'll entertain questions from both the press and the audience.
Yes. I have to fly over the Sound as far down as Sawmill Bay this morning. And probably like the governor was kind of aghast at what I saw. One of the things that seemingly has been something that Exxon's been doing all week is trying to encapsulize the spill in a certain area, and yet when you fly over it, it looks so vast and so magnificent in its breadth and width that it seems to me anyway, this reporter, that we've been misled in terms of how big the spill really, really is. And I was down that far south, and I saw it heading right out into the Gulf. I also understand that there were booms set up, and there was oil on either side of the booms, so even some of the boom work isn't working in effectively to keep the oil out of the coves.
This spill is huge, many hundreds of square miles. We have to be careful, though, that the scope of that doesn't seem to us so overwhelming that we become paralyzed in our ability to work. And so we have to choose specific targets, mobilize our energy to hit those targets effectively, and then choose other ones and move on, which is what we're trying to do.
How does what you're doing now with the strike force differ from what you've been doing, which is linking up with fishermen and looking to Exxon to provide backup support and money?
Let me ask Larry to come up and respond to part of that. But initially, we selected those four most critical sites to protect and to put defensive fortifications in place. What we called it then was the State Fishermen's Strike Team. And now what we've done is expand the scope of it, choose a different set of targets while maintaining the defensive fortifications that we already have in place, and then to move on a broader front. The area that we've selected is essentially an important part of the Knight Island area, and the level of effort is going to be substantial. As we go along, we'll evaluate whether we can add even more to our strike force effort.
You're not cutting out Exxon in any way, are you?
No, Exxon will still be involved in backup, and the Coast Guard as well. So those folks are still involved. We're still cooperating. I think it would be misleading, though, if I weren't to point out that this effort began when the fishermen came to us and said, let's do some things on our own. Let's put some self-help together. And the state said, we're ready to go. And then we sat down with Exxon and the Coast Guard and said, maybe you can help. So we are working together, but I want to make sure that the fishermen and our crew out in the field are understood as having kicked this off. Larry, did you want to say anything?
Governor?
Yeah. The Sierra Club, I understand, is putting a lot of pressure on you to close down this port. It's their understanding that this port could never sustain another spill now, could never handle another spill if one of these tankers in here this week would have an accident like the one here. Should this port be open the way it is?
Well, for the moment, there is probably the largest concentration of oil spill equipment that we'd ever have here. The tankers are being escorted in and out. The pipeline is, to my knowledge, unless things change today, operating at about one-third the normal volume. It's about 800,000 barrels a day. It's been operating at 2.1 million barrels a day. The real question, however, is whether the current set of contingency plans are to be allowed to continue the same way they have. The answer is no. There's going to be a much better plan. There's going to have to be absolute proof that the equipment's in place, that the personnel are there and properly trained. There's going to have to be periodic drills and probably a lot of other things, too. That will be done by the pipeline company. We're authorized to do that, and if it isn't done, we're authorized to close the pipeline.
Governor, we didn't have that to begin with. Do you feel in any way responsible personally for the extensive damage caused by this spill?
No, I don't feel personally responsible, sir.
Governor?
Since you asked.
How would you characterize Exxon's effort to date in managing the cleanup and containment of this spill?
Well, I think that they have responded in their way. Well, Exxon is a large bureaucracy, and sometimes it's difficult for large bureaucracies to respond as quickly as smaller bureaucracies will say. Being a smaller bureaucracy, we're a little quicker.
What do you mean by that?
Wait, question. I have a question as to what's going to happen. I know there's a computer model being developed as far as what's happening with the oil as it moves out of the Gulf. Into the Gulf? What's happening as far as Seward and fisheries, Kenai Fjords, what's happening for protecting them and looking at what's going to happen?
I'm at somewhat of a disadvantage here. I got up at 4:30 in the morning, and I've been in an airplane almost continuously till I arrived here. Maybe Denny can tell you what the current information is.
You already know that there are computer models describing, or that are being worked on now to describe the trajectory of the oil in the Gulf. Fortunately, the Gulf has substantial information about distribution patterns and movement of currents. So we and the other, the Coast Guard and Exxon, are going to be consulting with those experts. That's already underway. We're also continuing our mapping. And as of the last flight that I have specific information on, and Larry can tell you if there's anything more specific, there was what appears to be a substantial area of oil, which is offshore, roughly 25 miles, and essentially halfway between here and Seward, 10 to 15 miles offshore, and we will be, of course, tracking that carefully. We've also been working with the city of Seward, and we'll be have asked Seward to send a representative back to Valdez now to meet with us to evaluate what other tools might be put in place defensively to protect Seward and Resurrection Bay, Kenai Fjords, and then, of course, if the circulation patterns suggest anything continuing around the corner, we'll be wanting to be on top of that as well.
Commissioner, what's the latest number on how many square miles are affected?
This question is being responded to by Commissioner of DEC, Dennis Kelso.
When we describe the spill, sometimes it's difficult to give you a correct area representation because some of the sheens are long streamer types of things. But the spill is in excess of 500 square miles, I think, regardless of how you calculate it.
For Governor Cooper, how much money and resources are you committed to spending on this strike force, and will you see compensation for us from Exxon?
All it takes. And we'll take whatever steps we have to take to recover that money. But we're not going to be in a situation where we're haggling over nickels and dimes when the work needs to be done. If we have to advance the money from the state and get it back later, that's what we'll do.
So if you're having a problem understanding how this compensation is going to work, you talked about fishermen being able to put in more or less now for damages maybe 5 or 6 years from now. A, that means they have to project their income. Well, you said they could claim they wouldn't have to wait 5 or 6 years to prove damages. They could possibly begin to claim on those before they actually incur the damage.
No.
Then how could they prove that they were losing money if they
misunderstood what I said. What I said was, normally when you have a claim for damages, particularly if it's in the law courts, you have to wait until all of your damages are provable before you can collect any of them. We're not going to have that situation here where fishermen are able to prove that they have lost income by reason of this oil spill. They get the money right away, and then if they lose money next year, they get more money, and if they lose money the third year, they get more money again. Furthermore, we'd like to see a system through which fishermen who fish different species in different seasons can pick up their damages right away.
Well, they would still have to project out to some extent their income for the following year.
Right.
Is there going to be a cap on how many years they'll be able to claim because these damages?
No, there's no cap to this as far as I'm concerned. No, you can't project out. That's not what I'm talking about. You can't project out what might be your income a year from now, but you can tell if you didn't have any income a year from now, you can tell bring in some evidence as to what your income would have been had you been able to fish.
Based on past income, though.
Well, we don't know how we're going to do that yet. The details of that have not been worked out. The important part is that fishermen will not have to go through some elaborate system of proof before they get compensated. That was the point.
I understand
understand that, but say, for example, in the case of Agent Orange, a very, very large fund was established and no one individual got compensation for any particular injury that corresponded to their medical bill.
Okay. So we'll figure it out. We'll make it work. We don't have the details at the moment. Thank you.
Governor, should the state have apprehended the captain of the Valdez sooner than they did? I guess they haven't caught him yet. But
we didn't know where he was.
Could you...
Do you
should
now?
He have been watched? Should his whereabouts have been tracked?
Well, now, in the first place, the state had to make a formal investigation of whatever charges there were. By the time the state people got on the scene, the skipper was gone. And by the way, he had a lawyer right away as well. I took it that he needed one. So we've got a petition out to get him brought back here.
He will extradite if you locate him.
I think we've already done that. I think we said we've got the papers.
The reason I say that is somebody else in the press told me that. I mean, I've been out of contact with my attorney general, but I think that's what he's done. That's what he said he was going to do.
Governor, is there any indication from the Bush administration that they've changed their stand on leasing in Bristol Bay since this?
No. There's no indication from the administration that they have changed any of their positions on this at the moment.
Governor, I'm curious as to why the Bush administration is saying that they do not feel it's necessary to bring in federal help. When I see Army, I see Coast Guard, and I'll probably end up seeing Navy before I leave here, come in and help you out.
Well, the reason for the request for an emergency declaration, bear in mind this was not a request for a disaster declaration. It's a different thing. It's a request for an emergency declaration. And what that does is to authorize, actually require, that a federal takeover of the spill be done. Now, at the time that I made that request, it appeared that the parties in question, which would include the state, Exxon, and the Coast Guard, just simply couldn't get anything together. And the oil, nothing was happening out there. So we said, all right, somebody's going to have to take charge here. Statutorily, the only thing that we could do was to call on the federal government to do that. Now, miraculously, after we did that, the night after we did that, then the parties got together and formed a management structure that could work. And so the request is still in abeyance. It's still hanging out there in case we need it.
Governor, do you see this in the current?
Yes. That's right. I see her, and she's got the floor.
Why did it take so long to get the booms out there?
Because the booms were not in the area, or they weren't any good. They weren't appropriate for such a large spill as this. There's no excuse for it.
Who was supposed to store the booms?
Alyeska was supposed to store them. Some of the detailed answers to this, maybe Denny, you might want to answer to some of the details. But Alyeska Pipeline Company had the duty of first response. They were supposed to come out and do whatever was necessary to contain the spill. They were supposed to have been able to do that within 5 hours. They didn't.
Are you not upset that you had a positive answer from the federal government?
Pardon?
Are you not upset not to have a positive answer from the federal government?
Well, not as to the federal takeover of management of the cleanup effort. Not at the moment. As long as the present management structure is working, then we don't want a federal takeover. We don't want another person to come in and have to learn the ropes all over again.
Governor, Senator Stevens was here yesterday. Didn't see the Prince William Sound. Did he call you, or have you talked to him about what he saw?
No, he didn't.
Has he ever called you?
No. Yesterday was a...
No.
Governor, can you describe what
the gentleman back there?
Yeah, what I was wanting to know is how long
before they're going to start hiring a bunch of guys to clean this stuff up.
And, do we got to sit around for a couple months before we go to work, or what's the deal? Do you know anything, or how many people that they're going to hire? And I am Alaskan. I was born and raised here, too.
I don't know what to tell you. They will be hiring people, or Exxon will be hiring people when the people are needed. I can't tell you any more than that.
Can you describe what you saw today in the way of destruction of wildlife?
Yeah, sure will. I flew over that spill. This is the third time that I've looked at the spill, and each time it's gotten progressively larger. We went to Titlick and talked to the villagers there. I came from Cordova to begin with. It's obvious that they're upset and that some compensation is going to be necessary there. The spill itself would be hard to describe, the extent of it. It was like flying over a small state. It was a huge amount of, there was a huge amount of oil on the water. I stopped at Green Island, which I understand does not have as much oil on it as Night Island, but that's the one I stopped on. The oil was on the rocks, on the beach, 2 or 3 inches deep in some places. Although on Night Island, I understand it's some places it's 2 feet. I can't vouch for it, but that's what they say. There were a couple of dead birds there that we saw. We didn't stay all that long, but there was a Forest Service crew there doing some baseline studies for research that'll be necessary for quite some time. It was a discouraging sight, sir.
Governor.
Yes.
What I'd like to know is, are you going
to authorize them to bring that tanker back into the harbor here, considering the holes in it? If you bring that back in here, you're going to finish the bay completely.
Well, nobody has told me what plans they have for the tanker. We'll pass judgment on them when we have a proposal. We don't know.
They're bringing the tanker back into harbor.
Well, okay.
From our working with Exxon in the operations group, it's our understanding that 3 sites, not including Valdez Harbor, are currently under consideration. One of the factors that we have asked Exxon to consider, and I think they would want to consider on their own, is how to avoid the risk of additional pollution. And so we have suggested, along with the Coast Guard, I believe, that sites that have already been oiled be considered as possible temporary repair sites. Exxon is still considering that. They have more discussion to do. We'll be offering our views along with the Coast Guard and the operations group. I don't have that information. I believe that the sites that I have seen that Exxon is considering were on Naked Island. Are all three?
Yes.
All three of the potential anchorages are on Naked Island. There are a variety of factors that they need to consider, including the depth so that the vessel can be properly anchored, and they of course have to look out for the ability of their divers to operate and move heavy plate into position.
I was with the record, and come from the southern side as you come up and you see the Exxon San Francisco, you also see a stream of oil spreading from underneath the tanker heading south-southwest. Now, Exxon has said that it has boomed off the wreck site, and presumably there's no other oil that is escaping from the tanker. And yet, clearly, the pilots and I did see a stream of oil heading from the wreck. Is it still leaking, to your knowledge?
Larry Dietrich from DEC is answering the question.
The damaged vessel is supposed to be boomed. They did have to do a change out to complete the transfer with another tanker, and I don't know if they didn't get the boom back around or what, but yeah, it's logical to me that the potential for leakage is there. I mean, there's some significant holes in that vessel, and
it's under the booming. It's coming actually under the booming. You can see the boom circulating around it, but the oil is actually leaking out from beyond the boom.
Okay, the boom was in place then.
Yeah.
Okay, you have to realize that the booms have a skirt on it, and depending if there's a strong currents or winds, booms are not foolproof. And if there's a strong current, the apron that hangs down in the water angles up. It will wash. They are not a perfect containment system for sure. So,
Larry, while you're up there, can you explain what these vacuum trucks are? Are they actual wheeled trucks?
Yes, they are.
And what do they do? Well, how are they different from skimmers?
They're like a big Hoover. They vacuum. They literally. I forget the specs on them, but they can pick up a concrete block from Jackie. They are very powerful, and they are a suction machine, and they take it into a tank. And they're used up at Prudhoe Bay and North Slope all the time for picking up spills. So we got together as some Alaska ingenuity and said, what if you put one of these on a deck barge and went about? So we're going to give it a try.
Well, why weren't they here as a preventive measure in advance?
Well, these are deployed. The vacuum trucks themselves are not a conventional piece of open sea spill response.
Shouldn't they be?
I won't forget you. Maybe I can say something about this. You know, we came up with this name, the State Fisherman Strike Force, because it was the fanciest name we could think of. But the truth is, we put this together between 12 and 3 in the morning, a couple of mornings in a row. This is just a bunch of Alaskans putting together whatever ingenuity we have. And if one of these super suckers will work, we'll use it.
I was wondering if you or the governor knew if the state legislature, our state legislature, has given any indication of support for a DEC budget so you can do more and monitor Alyeska and not just check restaurants.
Do you want to make my budget presentation? I have one coming up. Well, we have a long ways to go yet in the budget process. We had a budget hearing in the House, and our House subcommittee recommended some additional funding. The Senate on Friday increased. The Senate voted in favor of a bill the governor has submitted that would increase the Oil and Hazardous Substance Release Response Fund by $20 million, which is a step in the right direction. The governor, 2 years ago, asked me to evaluate where the agency stood and what we needed to do our job. And we came in, we looked at what we already had assigned to us by statute. Nothing new, no frills, nothing extra. And essentially it came down to the good news being we knew what the shortfall was. The bad news was it was about $10 million. And that didn't include anything like strengthening our oil and hazardous substance spill response. It just meant getting up to a basic minimum. So the governor started a program then of trying to take steps in an orderly way up to that stable core. Last year, the legislature increased it somewhat, didn't appropriate all the money the governor had requested. One of the items that didn't get appropriated was the money for oil spill contingency planning and inspections. This year, the governor again asked for some additional funding. You know, we won't be up to that minimum stable core, but if the governor's request is adopted or expanded, it'll get us closer. So, you know, step by step. I don't want to give you the impression that we're out of the woods. That's not the case, but we're hoping people will listen this time around.
I hope the legislature knows that the people of Prince William Sound are supportive of that.
Thank you.
Mr. Kelso, for Governor Cooper, please. Governor?
Sure.
Just a question for you. There's been some rumors of questionable hiring practices being employed by the non-union contractor. Could you maybe shed some light? Would the state be willing to supply information such as a permanent fund to show that people have actually lived in the state prior to being hired?
Well, that's a matter of public record. Sure.
Driver's license.
I can't speak for any abuses. I know that there have been union hires there by some contractors of Exxon. I know that.
Well, I'm not saying that I have. I've just heard from other people that feel the Alaskan priority thing is being gotten around a little bit with this state license, driver's license loophole. Would the state be willing to supply that kind of information, say a couple, 3 years of permanent fund dividends
Had
been cashed here to those people in this state?
We made a ruling, administrative ruling, that the identity of people who get permanent fund checks is a public record.
And would then...
You can check on it. You can write and find out.
Do you have any feelings as to what kind of pressure we might be able to apply to assure the possibility of Alaskans being hired for this spill?
Well, my experience is that if people know that a company is hiring out-of-state people, that the public reacts pretty quickly.
Well, I know these people would sure jump up in a hurry.
In an angry way.
Yeah, well, we got a lot of people who'd sure love to help out on that spill, and we sure appreciate your coming here. Thank you very much, Governor.
Sure. Yes.
On that same line, employees from one of the non-union contractors have been instructed not to talk to us. Is the state going to be able to get a list of those employees? Is there any way you can compare that
That's
with
the matter of public record, too. Where's Jim Sampson? We are authorized to make public those lists, aren't we, Jim, out from last year's statute?
We have the ability, if we receive the, we have the ability now, if we receive payroll records from an employer to cross back to permanent fund and release those to the public.
Okay. Are you willing to request that information?
Well, we got it. We don't have to request it.
Okay.
We got it.
You're going to put toward this strike force, and how much money is going to be available to compensate the fishermen short term?
I have no idea, because we don't even know how big the job's going to be. There's an open-ended view of this. It's the one I've got. We will do and spend whatever it takes, and we'll get compensated for the necessary sooner or later by Exxon, and they'll pay for some of it directly.
Governor, the oil companies have been promising for years that they would be able to respond to any major oil spill.
Yep.
In your opinion, how does that promise stack up today? And is that going to affect future development proposals by the oil companies and your future dealings with the oil companies?
Well, answer to your first question. Those promises are pretty empty, aren't they? And secondly, of course it's going to affect the political atmosphere in which the oil industry operates. As a matter of fact, it ought to be a pretty strong incentive for them to do very well with this cleanup, because a whole lot of people are watching, as you can see. In terms of what happens from now on with respect to spills of this magnitude, in my opinion, there needs to be a change in federal law to recognize the fact that a spill that occurs when a tanker either is involved in a collision or runs aground is completely different from a spill in the harbor when a pump breaks or something like that, and you've got 40 or 50 barrels in the harbor. It's a completely different situation, and it requires a different response. The required response in federal law is absolutely inadequate. It needs to be changed, and furthermore, there needs to be an international set of agreements about this.
Governor?
Yes, sir.
On the pipeline, potential for the shutdown of the pipeline, what would the state live on if the pipeline were shut down? The permanent fund?
Well, I don't know. I guess we'd probably have to draw our savings account somehow. I'm not going to be cornered with argument that, well, we can't do anything about this because then we'd run out of money if we did. I'm not going
to
get cornered into that.
Shut down the pipeline. What authority is that exactly?
It's a state law. It's a state law. I don't want to be in a position of issuing threats here. We're in the process of negotiating, if that's the right word. I'm not sure it is, but conversing with the industry about that matter, and we expect to have a firm answer very, very soon.
Governor,
One thing that struck me that does seem a little peculiar, why the arrangement to have this handoff from Alyeska to Exxon?
Because Alyeska is the entity that is here in place in Valdez Harbor. They're the people who are situated here.
Yeah, and that's why you guys do it then. I mean, why not? The Exxon's not here.
Well, I know, but somebody has to be designated to respond to any spill. It would be hard to predict that it would be an Exxon tanker that ran aground. Maybe it would have been an ARCO tanker. No matter which tanker it is, this entity here in this town, which is Alyeska, is the logical party to respond, assuming it's logical for a private company to be the one that responds.
Okay.
I don't necessarily make that assumption.
Governor, you've got a long-term problem here. The way these things go, media attention tends to be short-lived. In a week or two, all these cameras are going to go home. Are you concerned that when Exxon gets out from under the microscope and you're not in national headlines at least anymore, that you're going to be left high and dry, that you're not going to see the cleanup effort?
No way. No way. Let me tell you why. The whole world is watching Exxon's response on this one. The Congress is watching it. Foreign governments are watching it. The state of Alaska sure as hell is watching it. And there's no way that this is going to get swept under the rug.
Question again about Alyeska. Alyeska is not really a private company. It's a consortium of all the oil companies, including Exxon.
Well, it's not a government, that's for sure.
True, but they're here. They're here in Valdez Harbor.
Right.
So the day after the spill, they handed off the responsibility to a tanker firm without a stick of equipment in the entire area. Why were they allowed to do that? Wasn't it their responsibility?
Well, it's a little late once they don't respond because they don't have any equipment in the harbor. I mean, I can't explain why Alyeska's response was inadequate. That will be a subject of a very thorough investigation in which the state will utilize the subpoena power and the right to compel testimony under oath with the penalty of perjury. I can't tell you why. I have not talked with anybody from Alyeska since this happened.
Why is not the city of Valdez allowed to use some of the millions it makes from taxes to put together an emergency response just in case of this kind of an accident? Apparently the state is blocking that. That's what the mayor says.
I think that question is a little more complicated than that. I think it revolves around the tax power and that kind of thing. I don't think there is any kind of a block to the city of Valdez using its power in that way. I think it's a tax question that we're talking about there.
I have a couple questions looking towards the future and the continuance of tankers into the port. You mentioned earlier that obviously we have the largest collection of response materials now collected in this area, that I would sure like a guarantee about what percentage of these materials is going to be here once this spill is, quote, taken care of. You know, 2 or 3 years down the line, or even, you know, you said we could take care of another spill if it happened now, but 2 or 3 years down the line, are we going to have 3 skimmers and a little bit of booming, you know what I mean?
Well, if you do, the line's not going to be open, if that's all there is. I don't think there's any question about the fact that there will the necessary equipment and personnel and material will be on hand. It's a little late, but it'll be on hand.
But is that something that we can require them to do? And we can't depend on their good word, obviously.
No, we can't. I think it is. Let me put it that way. The state of Alaska put a very stringent set of standards on tankers in 1977. In 1979, a federal judge declared all of those laws to be unconstitutional. In the last legislative session, Representative Mike Davis put in a bill that required the Alyeska Pipeline Company to come up with a contingency plan, and the state had to require that. I think it's constitutional. We're going to assume that it is.
I'm advocating disallowance of tankers in here, but another concern I have is, considering that we have such a large amount of response capabilities here now, and still with a spill of only this size, it appears to be minimally effective, what is the response capability had these gentlemen, if we can call them that, had been going 2 knots faster than they were going? I mean, you know, there's so many possibilities that this could have been so much worse. And the response capability for this size has been so...
Okay, let me comment on that for just a minute. You use the terminology "only this size." It is only the largest spill in the history of this country. I mean, it is a very big one.
Five times as much as it was.
And, as I mentioned a little while ago, a spill which involves a tanker collision or somehow the rupture of the hull of a tanker has got to be treated differently than one where there's an inadvertent breaking of a hose or something like that in the harbor. It's a different kind of response that you need. In honesty, it would be very, very difficult for anybody to predict that a fully loaded super tanker would be driven on a reef that appears on every maritime chart in this land by a skipper who's drunk. It would be very, very hard to predict that. And so that what we need to do is to make sure that we have an adequate response when, as and if, a similar incident takes place.
It's human error, and it's going to happen, and it will probably happen again. And I would sure like a guarantee that they're going to be much better prepared than they were this time.
That's right. That's right.
Is it possible to be prepared enough for a spill twice this size? Is it humanly, physically possible?
I don't know. I don't know whether it is or not.
Is there enough material available worldwide to be prepared for a spill twice this size?
Well, I think it would depend on how quickly you were able to respond to it and the way that it, how quickly it leaked. Yes, sir.
Governor Cooper, I don't, it's apples and oranges, but I wanted to ask you, in that it appears that the oil industry is culpable, at least in terms of lack of preparedness to deal with something like this, is this going to serve to mitigate or help you get the support you need in our state senate to repeal or modify our economic limit factor, if for no other reason to make the industry pay for the damage they've done?
Well, there's no logical connection, but of course logic doesn't have much use in politics, I have to tell you. I'm sure it will occur to some people to make the connection.
I got two more questions.
We'll take two more questions, but before we do, I wanted to add one piece of information. The question was raised earlier about safety factors related to the terminal and Alyeska's operations. I wanted just to add the information that during this week we have inspected the Alyeska terminal in order to determine what equipment is there. We will be conferring with the governor's office about the specifics that might be considered to improve safety there during this period. So the questions you raise are under review right now, and we'll be having more to say about that. I would like to also point out that the question that we're looking at here now, longer term, is not simply one of worrying about picking up oil once it's in the water. What we're looking at here is an overall system of delivering oil from the North Slope to markets a long distance away. That should not be determined, the safety of that should not depend on the culpability or conduct of any individual at the helm of a vessel. There are all kinds of systems involved, traffic control systems, the design of the vessel itself, whether oil spill contingency plans are the right way to handle this kind of thing at all. And every aspect of that delivery system and of the policies that surround it needs to be examined from this point forward. Two more questions for the governor. Back here.
I have a question for the governor. It was human error that also gave us the Glacier Bay incident in Cook Inlet, of which I'm a commercial fisherman of the Cook Inlet, and I participated in that mess. And you stated that immediate compensation for my fellow fishermen here in Valdez and in Cordova and surrounding areas. Well, my question is, we've been fighting the Glacier Bay incident for 2 years. What assurances are you going to give my fellow fishermen that this is a fact?
Well, let me put it this way. This is a different situation because of the size of it. It just is. I know it isn't fair, but it is a different situation because the culpable party, which is Exxon, has come forward and said that it is responsible and that it's going to make these payments. It's just a different situation. I know that people are having difficulties with the Cook Inlet spill as well in trying to prove their damages. There is, however, a liability fund that you can go to.
Right. Well,
it's not fair, but that's the reason. You ask the question, and that's the reason.
Right. The only thing that we got out of it was immediate compensation for our gear, period.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah.
About the zero tolerance issue and why we've made it such a big deal with Kevin Hogan and Homer there over that half a marijuana cigarette that was found on his nephew, and why the Coast Guard can't get it together when it's been made common knowledge that the tanker crews do party in this town, and why they haven't been checked every time they board the tanker again.
I take that question to be a commentary. Thank you. I think that's all we're going to be able to handle. Thank you very much. Good luck. We'll all need it.
And a fairly rousing round of applause for Governor Steve Cooper. This conference today featured Governor Steve Cooper, of course, and Commissioner of DEC Dennis Kelso. Also speaking was Larry Dietrich, who we've heard from a few times in the last few days. Larry Dietrich is the Director of Environmental Quality for the Alaska State Department of Environmental Conservation. Governor Steve Cooper today in his conference commended the fishermen of Valdez and Cordova. Last night we heard Dennis Kelso, the environmental commissioner, say that those fishermen, particularly CDFU, had been the backbone of the response effort.
It's going to do it anyway, and we'll sort out who pays later on.
This is just going to be a supplementary effort. This is not going to be an actual takeover.
It's a supplementary effort.
Governor, are you seriously thinking about a shutdown of the pipeline if Alaska can't assure you that it's prepared for a spill?
Yes.
Thank you.
Was an Exxon official?
Honor is Alaska in the air. Cornette?
I think so. I heard, to be honest with you, I don't know whether he was or not.
How is the coastline affected? Do you think it's possible to clean it up?
Not altogether, no. I think that we can be effective in selective ways. We can probably keep the oil from going into some places where it's very sensitive, but as a practical matter, no. We're going to do the best we can. That's all we've got.
Is this the kind of scale we're going to see on the beach cleanup? Exxon has about 60 people now working on the beach cleanup. You just hired a 40-man crew. Are we going to be seeing 40s and 50s?
It isn't time for a beach cleanup. As long as the oil is still in the water, it just isn't time for a beach cleanup. You have to wait and see either clean up the oil. Otherwise, you clean the beach and it goes right back on there. So it's going to take some time for the beach cleanup.
I have those folks.
Governor Cooper is still on the stage surrounded by quite a crew of the press corps and is responding to some questions. We have one of our microphones over there. We're trying to give you the questions and the responses.
Nice talk.
The governor has left now and ended his participation in the conference. Again, we heard today from Governor Steve Cooper of the state of Alaska, Dennis Kelso, the commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation. We heard from Jack Lamb, the president of the Cordova District Fishermen United, and from Larry Dietrich, who is the director of environmental conservation for the state DEC. Larry Dietrich's presentation was very interesting, some real specifics on an effort where the state intends to go on the offensive. To date, efforts have been taken to keep the oil that was left on board the Exxon Valdez from spilling and spreading and from protecting certain critical areas, areas that were identified in concert with local fishermen, CDFU, and other environmental groups and users of the Prince William Sound area. Now the state is planning to go on the offensive, sending the state ferry, the MV Bartlett, with a crew of people and skiffs to work as a sort of a floating operations center in Herring Bay, a bay on the north end of Knight Island, one of the most heavily impacted areas. Herring Bay is a large area of fairly contained waters and fairly protected. The Bartlett will be anchored there. Crews will work to contain the oil and use various skimming devices to pick the oil up. If this is successful, they hope to expand the effort. Within a few days, the Bartlett will be replaced by the MV Aurora. The state ferry that we heard yesterday was going to be put out of service for a while because of a Department of Transportation budget deficit. The Aurora will be here, will become the floating mothership for the state fishermen strike force, and there'll be EMTs on board, mechanics to support the skiffs, biological team. There'll be LCMs around to help clean up the oil. CDFU is providing the crews. One important point is that most of the workers on this will have been dispatched from CDFU. The governor did respond to a number of questions, specifically stating several times in various forms the current contingency system is inadequate and that in the future this would have to be improved if the pipeline is to continue to operate. Now, the governor talked about flying over some of the destructions that they've seen. Also coming up in the answer to questions, the answer is coming from Commissioner Kelso. There is a growing sense of resentment and opposition about returning the stricken Exxon Valdez to the port of Valdez, due in part because of the fact there will be oil still on the vessel and it will still be hold and open to the sea. At this point, plans are work is underway investigating possible sites, fairly protective bays or coves that have already been contaminated. They must have a certain depth. They must be fairly free of currents. And again, they're looking at areas around Naked Island, sites that are already somewhat contaminated. That's pretty much the rundown. It was a striking change in attitude, the audience breaking out into spontaneous applause many times for both the governor and Commissioner Kelso. Some strong statements about what we have to do, some strong statements about that the fact that the response required in federal law is inadequate as well as state law, and the governor stating several times that we will do and spend whatever it takes to clean up the spill, understanding, of course, that it's a long task and that some areas will be affected probably for years to come. In attendance today, in addition to the governor, members of the Alaska State Legislature. They didn't participate in the press conference as respondents, but we're here to observe. We had Senate President Tim Kelly, House Speaker Sam Cotton, Mike Navarre, George Jacko, and Senator Drew Pierce were here. KCHU understands that tomorrow the two senators that represent Valdez, State Senator Mike Szymanski and State Senator Jake Urtula, will be in the area. If there is a briefing or an opportunity to interview them, we will provide that interview for our listeners and for stations down the line. I want to thank KCHU staffers and some of our temporary staffers, Chris Badalek from APRN, Mary Beth Joyce from KCHU, here assisting in the broadcast at the Civic Center. Back at KCHU, Jeff Brown on loan from KTOO in Juneau is helping us out. I'm Dave Hammack. We have no further broadcasts scheduled for today. No one has announced a press conference or a briefing. If something comes up, we'll try to inform listeners and stations. But at this point, the only thing scheduled we know about is a briefing by Exxon at 4 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. For now, this is Dave Hammack, and this is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.